Derek leaned closer.
Silver? Pretty, but isn't that a bit impractical for a weapon? It'll break almost as easily as you're molding it.
This is only the first part. Karras continued to weave the metal between his fingers, beginning to roll the bottom section of the bar into a cylindrical shape between his hands. When I'm finished, it won't be silver. It won't be steel either. It'll be something greater.
His hands moved the material easily, but the work continued for minutes. It was probably close to an hour before he finished. Not one of us looked away.
I knew of metal magic. The god beast of Delanos was associated with the metal element, and I'd heard of a forge master attunement that could use metal magic. I'd never heard of anything like this. I'd never dreamed of anyone working metal with such ease. Karras had the basic shape of a hilt in minutes, but he worked with diligence, hardening some sections while he made others pliable. When the pommel was complete, he traced runes in the air which burned into the metal. Each letter was only the thickness of a fingernail, and he fit dozens upon the surface. It was when Karras was sculpting the crossguard that a look of recognition crossed Patrick's face, and he uttered a word in wonder.
Dawnbringer.
Karras turned to Patrick with an expression of surprise.
You recognize her?
Patrick nodded reverently.
I've read about the six sacred swords since I was a child. I know this isn't the real thing, but even seeing something that looks like one of them, it's beautiful.
Karras grinned.
I'm not done yet. Pass me three of Rin's gold regals. Those are the coins with the holes in the center.
Sarah passed the coins over, and Karras turned them over in his hand.
Make that five total. Pass me two more.
As Sarah moved to comply, Karras began to roll the gold coins in his hands. He was making them into round sections like he'd done with the handle, but he made them much thinner. He's making wire, I realized. He didn't wrap the wire around the grip like I'd expected, though. He started pressing it against the silver of the crossguard, then weaving it through the silvery metal like thread. Karras was drawing letters in a golden script, stretching the writing across the full surface. I couldn't read a word of it, but it looked like yet another language. Maybe it was another form of runes, but I'd never seen runes interconnected in a cursive format like this writing was. Either way, the result was beautiful. I'd never been one for the aesthetics of a weapon, but the gold on silver was a good look, and there was something ephemerally pleasing about how Karras was weaving it. It was beautiful, like the echo of something transcendent, something lost. Karras turned his head toward the metal pile.
I'll need another of the silver bars. It's time to forge the blade. This will take some time, so feel free to rest or eat if you need to. It's not going to be that interesting.
We all stayed, of course. He folded the metal bar in his hands, flattening it, stretching it into the shape of a blade. Then he folded it over, time and time again, in a process I assumed was some sort of analog to folding steel for a sword blade. I was no expert blacksmith, but I'd heard of the concept. I didn't think it applied to silver, but he'd mentioned that the metal would no longer be silver when he was done. Normally, when faced with new magic, I'd have a million questions. And I did hear, too, in my mind, but I couldn't bring myself to utter them. Karras didn't seem to have any difficulty concentrating, but it seemed inappropriate to interrupt. Like stopping a brilliant singer to ask about the meaning of a particular line. So I waited, and I watched. I didn't forget my questions, of course. I was still me. There would be time for magic theory later. True to his word, Karras worked for hours on forging the blade. Like with the hilt, he wove gold into the blade, tracing a gleaming wave straight through the center, stopping a few inches from the tip. He mirrored it perfectly on the opposite side. It had a small protrusion in the bottom that he inserted into the hilt, and when the metal met, it rippled and merged. When he was finished, the weapon looked to be forged of a single piece of metal. There were no cracks, no seams. When the weapon looked finished, Karras closed his eyes, placing two fingers against the sword's blade just above the hilt. A single rune burned into the surface, glowing gold. When his eyes opened, the blade was glowing a faint golden hue. He turned the weapon over, holding it by the blade, and offered it toward me. Your turn. I accepted the sword by the hilt, staring blankly. I'd been so stunned by the whole process that I'd almost forgotten that we were going to try to combine our sorcery. Right. Can you tell me what your enchantment does?
Nothing other than make it glow so far. I've just opened a connection with it. I also changed the way the metal itself works, but I wouldn't call that an enchantment. It's not using mana anymore. I altered the properties of the silver and gold. It'll be stronger than steel and lighter than silver. I need you to put some mana in there so I can actually have something to work with, and you can also add any additional functions you want.
I nodded. I can do that. Let me get my tools. I sat the sword down reverently, heading upstairs and retrieving my etching rod. When I got back, people were having food. I didn't blame them. Karis had been at it for something like 6 hours now. After a few moments of deliberation, I joined everyone else in a dinner break. That gave me some time to think about what I wanted, and to talk to Patrick.
What do you want this sword to do, Patrick?
He blinked.
I don't know. This is just so... It's amazing. I never thought I'd actually get a sword like this. I mean, I thought you might enchant something for me, and that's great and all, but...
I laughed. Don't worry. I get it. I'm no Karis. At least not yet. It's not every day you get a sword forged with ancient magic by... I glanced at Karis, who was biting into a sandwich. I still have no idea what you are, Karis.
Just me. I hope.
His words could have easily been a joke, but it didn't sound that way. He sounded... introspective, maybe. I let the subject drop. He'd tell us more about himself when he was ready. Besides, he looked ravenous. He was on his third sandwich and showed no sign of slowing down. I turned back to Patrick. You said you recognized this as being similar to an existing weapon. Do you want it to be like that?
Wow! But, yeah, that'd be amazing, if you can do that.
I shrugged. Don't know what it does. I've heard of Dawnbringer, but legends often get exaggerated. I sincerely doubt it can burn entire cities with the Dawnfire's light. Karis very nearly choked on his food.
They say that about Dawn?
Patrick beamed.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's this story about how Ishael Dawn's glow used it to wipe out an entire legion of monsters that came out of the Tortoise Spire.
Karis frowned, set his food down, took a drink, and then just stared silently at his plate for a moment. That was odd. I tried to pick the conversation back up. Okay, light powers. I don't think I can do that. Light mana isn't something I can use. Karis?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, light. Sure, I can do light mana, but I actually can't charge a weapon with mana the way you can. I can't enchant weapons the way you can in general.
What's the rune on the hilt, then?
Something different. It lets me sense the blade and channel mana into it, but not in the way an enchanter would. I can use it to alter the structure of the mana for the weapon, but if there's no mana inside, I can't do anything with it. And I can't make runes that generate mana like you can.
Patrick looked thoughtful.
So it's like what Derek does with his weapons?
Derek must have heard his own name and taken it as a signal to jump in.
Not really. I contract with creatures, then bind them to weapons, magical weapons, or otherwise. It sounds like Karis is more or less binding himself to the weapon?
Karis nodded.
That's a good way of putting it. Temporarily, in this case, so I can make modifications after Corrin does his part.
And you needed to make the bond before I did my part? I asked.
I didn't strictly need to, it's just that my magic has a tendency to be... damaging. If I have a connection in place before you make the enchantments, it should lower the risk of something going wrong.
I didn't quite understand what he meant by his magic being damaging, but he sounded like he was being deliberately vague, so I didn't press the issue. When I'd seen him fight, his magic was clearly specialized for offense, so maybe it had something to do with that. I finished eating and brought down my books of runes, thinking it over. I set the first book down and flipped it open. Okay, I think I know what we need to do. I've never actually done this before, but there are instructions in here for priming a rune so that someone else can contribute mana to it. That's how an enchanter normally makes something, like, say, a fire sword, even though he doesn't have fire mana. I traced a rune on the page. Basically, I draw a rune, then I fill it with a container of gray mana. Then the other person channels mana into the rune, and when it hits the capacity of the container, theoretically, the rune should activate. The important part is to stop channeling more mana into it when the container is full. Otherwise, you break the container and bad things happen.
Derek walked over.
It's not hard, actually. I've helped enchanters on several occasions. Whoever is contributing the mana to the runes should be able to feel the gray mana straining when you're reaching the capacity. Just don't push too much mana in there too fast. When the rune starts to glow, you're done.
I was sincerely grateful for that knowledge. This whole thing was sounding a little intimidating.
I'd hoped to enchant cooperatively at some point, but this scale was a little bigger than I'd imagined for my first project.
Okay, thank you, Derek.
I think what I'm going to do is draw runes for holding light mana, recharging light mana over time, and a maximum capacity for absorbing light mana. That combination of runes is fairly standard.
Light and fire, Karras interjected.
I turned to him.
Light and fire?
He nodded. If we're making this similar to Dawnbringer, her rays use both light and fire, and you're going to want some enhancements and transference, too.
I can do the same thing for those, but just to be clear, these won't actually do anything other than put mana in the weapon and store it. I'm not sure how to let it do Dawnbringer's fire attack.
Karras shook his head. You won't have to. Once it has all the right types of mana in it, I should be able to give the weapon the functions it needs.
I frowned. I thought you couldn't make runes on your own, though.
That's what the bond is for. Well, one element of it, anyway. Once there's mana in there, I can work with it. And to be clear, I can make runes. They just work somewhat differently.
Okay, fair enough.
I started flipping through my books, finding all the relevant runes and thinking. How high of a capacity do you want on these?
Karras shrugged. As high as you can go?
I'd expected that. Best I can handle is Sunstone, even if I'm just doing the containers. And the containers are only a tiny fraction of the total mana necessary for the enchantment.
Can you put multiple containment runes on it for a higher capacity?
I raised a hand to my lips, considering how best to explain.
Yes, but any individual spell effect can only draw from one capacity rune at a time. That means the strongest spells an item can cast can't take up more mana than a single capacity rune would hold. Also, you need a separate recharging rune for each capacity rune, and that gets expensive and time-consuming.
Okay, that's good to know. I won't put any spells on it that take up more than the mana capacity of one container, then.
If you can handle the containers, I can handle the rest. We can upgrade the rune to a higher level when you get powerful enough to do that. At that point, I can enhance the sword's other capabilities.
Where should I put the runes? Karras pointed at an empty section on the crossguard just above the grip.
Here. You going to use that tool?
I nodded.
I'll make it easier.
He touched the crossguard. The metal softened.
That's a pretty amazing trick.
With the softened metal, it was easy to etch the runes into the surface. When I was done, Karras waved his hand again, cleaning up any imperfections in my cuts and hardening the metal again.
I was a little jealous. Enchanting would be much easier if I could do that.
But etching was always the easy part anyway. Now came the hard part. I checked the exact amount of gray mana necessary to make a container for each rune, then got to work. And for once, my work was easier than I expected. Making the containers in the runes was very nearly identical to making a mana crystal, just in a rune shape instead of a prism shape. It was even easier in some respects, since the containers were designed to be hollow and extremely thin. The total mana requirement for a Sunstone-level container was 7.2 mana, or 1/50th of a Class 3 mana crystal. I'd only managed to make crystals that held 3 mana before, but I'd made them in droves without much effort once I'd gotten the hang of it. This was harder, but within my capabilities. A citrine-level shell would have been 6 times more, though, and I didn't think I had a chance of handling that. And certainly not 12 of them in a day. I made 6 shells, took a break for an hour, and then made 6 more. When I was done, Karis tried to charge one. It shattered instantly. There was a flicker of light in the rune, but fortunately no explosion. Karis muttered a curse I didn't recognize, and I rebuilt it. Then he tried again, this time a bit more slowly. After a minute, his jaw had tensed and he was breathing heavily, but the rune began to glow. Karis pulled his hand away, taking a deep breath. 1 down. 11 to go. I let Karis charge the other 2 light runes before I got an idea. Hey, Patrick.
Yeah?
Why don't you try charging one of the fire runes? I mean, at least part way. It's going to be your sword.
Can I?
He looked positively gleeful at the idea.
Yeah, but to be clear, you're not going to be able to fill it all the way up. These are sunstone-level runes.
I'm doing the easy part, which is only 7 mana each. Karis has been putting 360 mana into them. I didn't say it, but Karis didn't look any more tired than when he'd started. The only stress for him seemed to come from channeling the mana slowly enough to avoid breaking the runes or the weapon itself. I handed Patrick the mana watch.
Check your total.
It says 49? Okay, good. Just about the same as my attunement. We'll get you stronger, but for now, let's be safe. You're going to channel 30 mana in there, then stop. Then Karis will handle the remaining 330. Patrick grinned.
Got it.
Derek sat down across from us.
You know what? I can help too. I'll finish the fire runes so Karis can rest. Assuming you all want me to.
Patrick clapped his hands together.
More the merrier.
Karis gave Derek a nod.
I'd be grateful for your help. The fewer runes I have to handle myself, the fewer chances I have to break it.
Patrick seemed to struggle to put enough mana into the rune at first. I couldn't blame him. He'd probably never used more than a couple points to activate an item, and casting a spell probably felt completely different. But all told, it only took him a few minutes to get the 30 mana into the first fire rune. Derek finished the rest of it in under a minute. And of course, he didn't look tired at all. In spite of his usual attitude, though, I don't think Derek was just trying to show off the fact that he could help as easily as Karis could. When he smiled afterward and shook Patrick's hand, I saw true camaraderie there. Making something, it seemed, brought out the best in all of us. Transference mana was last. I was tempted to try to do some of it myself, but after 13 runes at 7.2 mana each, my hand was burning pretty bad. Taking the break in the middle had been smart, but it hadn't been long enough for me to completely recover from that level of strain. I could have drawn from my mental mana, but I didn't want to. So I let Karis handle it. He seemed to have an easier time with these, going through them faster without breaking a single one. And then it was done. 12 runes glowing on the hilt.
Okay, great.
Karis took a breath.
Now let's get the other side.
I stared at him incredulously.
You're joking.
Not at all. Need to make sure the sides of the sword match. And besides, I'm going to need more mana to work with.
I sighed. Fine, fine. But first, I need a break. Can you tell us what the rest of the items do?
Fine. Fine, let's go.
We headed back over to the item pile. That foreboding-looking dagger with the black aura? It was gone. I stared at the spot where it had been lying last. Karis was staring right along with me.
That's bad, I offered.
Really bad, he agreed. We spent the next hour or so searching the house for the missing weapon, but with no success. Patrick voiced what I suspected most of us were wondering.
How'd it disappear? Daggers don't just get up and walk away. Do they?
More than likely it teleported.
Karis knelt near the spot the dagger had been lying on the floor, turning his head toward Derek.
I take it the wards on this building are for keeping things out, not for keeping anything inside?
Right. It didn't vanish instantly, though. That's unusual.
Karis stood up.
Probably was waiting for us to be distracted so it could get a head start on us.
You're saying it was intelligent? I asked.
Almost certainly. It was one of the few magical items in the box I didn't recognize at all. Maybe it was dangerous enough that Rin didn't want to tell me she had it. Or maybe she just got it recently. Either way, your guesses about it are as good as mine.
Patrick frowned.
Could it be Lux Touch?
I hadn't heard of that one.
What's that?
Karis answered.
Intelligent shape-shifting weapon, usually associated with legends of Ayara Haven, the Lady of Thieves. And yes, it's plausible Rin could have had Lux Touch. She and Ayara don't get along, but Lux Touch is notoriously fickle. If he wanted to get on Ayara's nerves, working with Rin for a while would be one way to accomplish that.
I nodded. Okay. Any other possibilities?
There are numerous intelligent weapons out there. It could very easily have been one bound with a monster like the ones I use, Derek offered.
Patrick looked thoughtful.
Maybe it was the Midnight Star?
Karis gave Patrick an inquisitive look.
Doubtful. That's supposed to have three blades, sort of like a trident.
Surprised you've even heard about that. Or Lux Touch, for that matter. Those are legends from my own homeland.
I like to study weapons and monsters in general. Stories of those go back to before the exodus to Caldwin.
Good to know. Derek, any chance you know a diviner that can track the destination of a teleportation spell?
Of course, but without something tied to the item, tracking it will be virtually impossible. A physical description is insufficient.
I thought about that. Would the aura from the weapon have seeped into the wood where it was lying?
No, not just in a few hours. If it had been sitting there for weeks, maybe.
Begging your pardon, my lords, but if it teleported, would that have left a trail?
We all looked at Marissa, surprised that she'd interjected. She was usually quiet when Derek was involved in a conversation.
Derek frowned. That might work.
I can ask. Let's finish cataloging the rest of this, then I'll go find a diviner. I'd rather know what we're dealing with before anything else wanders off.
Karis gestured at the remaining items.
Nothing too exciting here, I'm afraid.
He lifted up the mirror first.
Another communication device. Works like the earrings, but with images rather than sound. I would have been more excited about it, but I have one of my own, and it doesn't seem to work at all. I'll try to get this to function, but my best guess is that the paired mirror is out of range.
Karis set that aside and picked up one of the rings. It was silver, with a design of a leaf, or maybe a feather.
Jumping ring. Motion. Sorry, you'd call it transference magic. Fairly straightforward. It lets you jump much further.
I looked at the ring with renewed interest. Further? Does it trigger when you jump and add an additional burst of force? Or do you trigger it manually somehow?
Not sure. Never used this one. Just saw Rin with it. I think you activate it manually, so I suppose that adds a bit of flexibility, but a little bit of a cost as well.
I nodded at that. Okay, thanks. He picked up the other ring, turned it over, and set it back down. This one was gold with a single blue gemstone.
Not sure about this one. We'll have to ask the diviner to look it over.
Next, a necklace with a spiral-shaped translucent crystal.
This is easily the strongest item in the bunch.
Surprised she left it in the box.
It blocks most mind-affecting spells.
He smirked at Derek.
I can think of a few people who might need something like this.
Derek folded his arms.
One time, Karis. It happened one time.
Karis shrugged a single shoulder.
Well, if you don't think you'll need it.
Derek leaned over and snatched the necklace out of Karis's hand.
Fine. I'm borrowing it. We can talk about a trade later.
Thought so. Karis laughed, picking up the last of the glowing items. The hairpin.
Ah, yeah. Rin loves these. I'm sure everyone's heard stories about hairpins being used as emergency lockpicks.
Well, that rarely works well in practice.
Except if you have a magic hairpin.
Now that was interesting. Maybe even more than the necklace. I leaned a little closer.
Think it'd work on chests or doors in the tower?
Don't know. I usually just break those. But since Katashi seemed upset about my habit, it may be worth trying this out. You want to borrow it?
I nodded hastily.
You bet I do. Also, the jumping ring.
He blinked.
Really?
Definitely. Mobility is one of my biggest weaknesses, especially compared to someone like you or Derek.
I still wouldn't be able to keep up with you, but I might slow you down a bit less.
Karis handed over the ring and the pin.
Thanks. My response was subdued, but inside I was positively gleeful. Even if I was just getting to borrow them, I loved having new magical items to play with. I didn't know if the hairpin would actually work when I needed it to, but I could already think of several rooms where the ring might have helped.
Before I forget to ask, how do I actually use the hairpin?
Oh, just stick it inside the lock. If you touch the tumblers, it should force them to realign.
Huh.
That implied it had some kind of detection magic built in. Otherwise, it couldn't know how the locks worked and how to realign them.
Fascinating.
I wanted to test that immediately, but I had a feeling Derek wouldn't like me tinkering with his locks. Instead, I slipped on the ring.
Anyone want to make sure I don't fall off the roof?
Patrick laughed.
Oh, I have to see this. Sarah? Mara, are you coming?
We headed up to the roof, which was definitely the best place to practice untested transportation magic. Definitely. I managed to avoid knocking myself off the roof the first time I used the ring. Not the second time, though.
Oh, goddess, levitate!
Patrick shouted, and I floated safely down to the ground. My friends gazed over the edge, and I waved up at them sheepishly.
I'm fine. I'm fine.
The amount that the ring pushes me is based on the amount of mana that I send into the ring. It's probably converting gray mana into transference, as Karis mentioned, or possibly air, maybe a combination of both. Which means, if I use a little more from down here... I jumped, then activated the ring and flew back onto the roof. My descent was slower than it should have been, even without Patrick's intervention. Apparently, whoever built the ring was smart enough to realize that jumping high would result in falling from great heights. Still, I appreciated Patrick's quick thinking when I'd fallen. A fall wouldn't have killed me either way. My sigils and Ring of Regeneration would have saved me, but it sure could have hurt. I landed among my friends with a smile.
I could get used to this.
A bit more tinkering gave me a better idea of the ring's intended uses, and maybe a few other options. After that, it was time to try out something I'd been waiting even longer to tinker with.
Patrick, come over here.
Sure.
Take off your glove.
He frowned, but complied.
Did I do something wrong?
Oops. Did the social failure thing again? He probably thinks that's symbolic or something.
No. I want to try out my new attunement and see if I can make you more powerful.
His expression brightened.
Ooh, am I the first one?
I nodded.
Yep,
haven't tried it on anyone else yet. I considered explaining my logic about Marissa and Sarah having just received similar infusions of mana from other sources, but after considering it, I realized that would just diminish his happiness at being the first one picked. He stuck his hand closer.
Okay, let's do this. Hit me with all you've got.
I grinned, checking my mana watch. 65 of 84. I'd recovered almost all of my mana while we'd rested, and then used a bit of it again to tinker with the ring. My hand was still hurting, but it was tolerable for the moment. I turned my enchanter attunement on. It had helped me monitor his aura to see what happened. With that done, I took Patrick's hand. I sent a surge of mana through my attunement into his. The aura around my hand flashed, then glowed white while the attunement was active. That was unexpected. It didn't glow like that when I was just enchanting an item. The aura must have been the purification function at work. From my side, it didn't feel any different from the usual tingling sensation of sending my mana into an object. As I spent more time, the tingling would give way to burning and then throbbing along with my pulse. I didn't know what it would feel like to him, though.
Does that hurt at all?
No, but it's... maybe a little uncomfortable. It feels like my hand is filling up with water or something, and that the water wants to get out.
Not a bad analogy for what I was doing to the attunement, really.
I'll just charge it a little more then.
His aura flickered, and his knees buckled for a moment. He stumbled away from me, his aura shifting from transparent to crimson. The rune on his hand changed.
Whoa!
Marissa caught him before he could fall over.
I stepped closer.
You okay? Yeah, Wow. I think I need to spend some of this.
Marissa helped Patrick stand back up. Then he turned his hand upward and cast a blast of lightning into the air. He took a deep breath, and his aura faded back from carnelian down to quartz. His runes shifted back too, changing to the simpler quartz style. I patted him on the shoulder.
Better now?
Patrick nodded.
Yeah, that was just more intense than I expected. What happened?
All right. He couldn't see what I could. You hit carnelian for just a second.
Really? That is so amazing. Can you do it again?
I found myself grinning, infected by his enthusiasm. Yeah, but I'm not supposed to push someone over their maximum capacity more than once per week. We didn't really push you to your limit. That'd be temporarily doubling your mana. But I don't think we should risk breaking any rules until I have a better idea of what I'm doing.
Huh? I finally hit carnelian and I barely got to do anything with it.
He laughed.
But it was still great. Thank you, Corin.
No problem. I subconsciously wiped my hand on my shirt. Touching someone else still wasn't easy for me. The moment of experimentation had overridden my reticence toward touch, but now the aftermath was hitting me hard. It only took me a few moments, so you're already very close. You should hit carnelian permanently soon. If you haven't hit it by next week on your own, I'll give you a boost once a week until you get there.
That sounds amazing. Thanks!
He stretched his arms.
I think I could still use some more exercise, though. You want to practice a bit?
I shook my head. I think I need to rest for a few. Really, I just needed a few minutes of not dealing with people. Maybe one of the other two will spar with you? Marissa waved him over. I found a corner as far away as possible and sat down to watch. Sarah sat down next to me in silence. She was intruding on my isolation, but I found myself being bothered less than I expected. Maybe it was just because I didn't need to talk to her, but Sarah didn't bother me the same way that other people did, even among my friends. I didn't know why, but at the moment, I didn't really need to think about it. I did, however, think about other things in those next minutes of silence, like how much fun it had been to spend some time experimenting with my friends, even if it had ultimately proven to be too intense to continue. It also made me realize that I'd taken an uncharacteristic risk by tinkering with the ring on the roof. True, I'd nearly blown myself up when I'd first built my gauntlet, but I'd taken what I'd considered to be reasonable precautions. This time, my main precaution was bringing my friends. And it had worked. Even if the ring hadn't had a built-in safety function, Patrick would have saved me. I'd trusted them, and they'd helped me. That was a surprisingly good feeling, especially after everything I'd been through with the tower. Jin came back to mind without an express invitation, and Tristan quickly followed. There was a part of me that felt like any trust that I formed was just going to be betrayed. I shoved that part of me aside as hard as I could. One moment of joy couldn't banish everything that had happened, but it was a good start, and I was going to bask in it for a while. Adding to my own positivity was Patrick's obvious awe at the replica of Dawnbringer that we'd been working on. It wasn't quite finished yet, but it was already obviously Patrick's favorite thing in the world. He was having the time of his life just swinging it at Marissa, even if she was deftly dodging or deflecting every strike before it could connect. It was good that we hadn't actually finished the sword yet, because I would have had to step in and stop him from using it if the weapon was more dangerous. I didn't trust shield sigils to stop whatever crazy magic Karis ended up imbuing it with. Patrick nearly ended up going off the roof, too, before their sparring match was over. For a while, Sarah and I just watched Patrick and Marissa's sparring practice. After a bit, though, she passed me a note. Thanks for working so hard to find something to trade for me. With all these items, we'll probably have something Sheridan wants. I wasn't so certain about that. If anything, the intelligent dagger that had wandered off seemed like the most likely candidate for something that would be considered forbidden knowledge. No problem. I'll keep working on this. And even if Sheridan doesn't want to help,
I'll keep looking until I find someone who will. I have some ideas, too. You don't need to make this the only thing you focus on. I'm sure you still want to figure out what Tristan has been up to. In truth, I'd barely been focusing on that at all since I'd learned he was alive. It still hurt too much to think about. Couldn't he have told me sooner? 5 years. I still wanted to know what had happened to him, but the Tristan who had written to me in that book wasn't what I'd imagined. I'd imagined that I'd find his body after many years of searching and beg the goddess to restore him to life. Or if I was truly lucky, maybe he'd just be a prisoner in need of rescue. I'd known the latter case was unlikely, but I'd hoped for it, since it would be so much simpler. But this Tristan? He sounded confident, almost pleased with what was happening. In truth, he sounded like Tristan usually did, and that was the worst part. I hadn't even checked the book again to see if he'd sent a reply when I'd asked for proof. I didn't need to. I knew it was him. I knew the arrogance, the veiled insults toward people he didn't respect. Every word of that letter was Tristan's signature. The relief that I'd hoped for along with that confirmation simply wasn't there. Was it horrible of me to be unhappy that Tristan was happy? That my fantasy of rescuing him was unnecessary? A part of me was still clinging to the hope that there was something amiss that I'd need to fix. I didn't have the whole story about the situation, of course. Maybe he had a good reason for everything he was doing, but I feared the possibility that he didn't. And because of that, I'd stopped looking. That was unacceptable. You're right. I do want to know what happened to Tristan. But you're right here, and helping you is a higher priority. I'm still going to keep looking for him. But now that we know he's alive, it's nothing I need to rush. It was a coward's answer, at least in part. But Sarah nodded, seeming to accept it. We looked back to the fight after that, but my mind was elsewhere. Tristan, what are you really up to? Chapter 6. Two heads are better than one. I tried to bury my worries about Tristan in my studies, but my mind kept wandering. How had he survived? Did mother and father know? And perhaps most importantly, why was he involved in kidnapping Tengen? I needed to talk to him directly at some point. He had ample chances to tell me about his situation through the book if he had wanted to. He'd even sent that hooded figure to talk to me in the spire. That couldn't have actually been him, could it? Could his human body have been taken away? I shook my head. It was much more likely that the creature I'd seen was some sort of solid illusion, like those created with the Shadow Attunement. I needed answers. I reached under my bed and retrieved Trials of Judgment. I'd been procrastinating about reading the mysterious book entity's reply to my question. I'd been afraid to face the possibility that it really was Tristan. But that was absurd, and I knew it. Why would I give up when I was finally this close to my goal? I could do better than that. I could be better than that. I flipped open to the most recent page and looked for the mysterious book entity's latest reply.
Corin, your skepticism is warranted. In your position, I wouldn't believe a presumably deceased family member was writing to me either. There are any number of other explanations, after all. Perhaps I'm simply using the name Tristan to get inside your head after having watched your behavior in the spires. Maybe I need to manipulate you for some sort of task. But ask yourself first, why would I bother with a ruse on that scale? What advantage would there be for me to cultivate a single student as an asset, providing you with a legendary weapon and an escape from the spire? The answer is obvious. With my level of influence, there are clearly more powerful tools available. So there's your logical answer. There's no good reason for anyone else to be bothering. But it's still easy to argue that perhaps it was simply an issue of opportunity. Maybe I didn't have the ability to place the book wherever I wanted, and it was your choices that led us to this discussion. Maybe I'm simply taking advantage of what information I can glean about you. I'll offer you another form of proof, then. When we were children, Father made an effort to introduce us to many prominent families. He was an excellent performer, parading us as prodigies. Martial talents unlike any seen in a generation. We were winning children's duels almost as soon as we could walk. And while displaying our dubious talents, he made connections and reacquainted himself with old friends, friends in higher places than his own. We were taught to be proper, to be polite, and to never say too much about the state of affairs at home. The intent of it all was quite obvious in retrospect. Our family's flames had been fading since the war, and he hoped to secure our name through profitable marriages. Do you remember Unica? Perhaps you've seen her more recently than I have. I remember how we used to talk about how perfect it was that she was my age and her sister was yours. I'd joke that we could be double brothers if we married them both. You argued it would be triple brothers, since we'd be brothers by blood and brothers by marriage twice over. Father would have been pleased if things had gone that way, I'm sure. I remember Unica. I think of her fondly at times. Other times I regret that I had so little foresight, so little understanding of why Father introduced us to those girls in the first place, and what our fates might have been if things had gone the way he wanted. So yes, I am your brother. I have thought of you often in the years we have been apart. In asking the voice of the tower about me, it is clear that you thought of me as well. That pleases me, though it reflects a weakness in your character. You should have grown beyond me long ago. Still, I must admit to a degree of satisfaction that I left a lasting mark. It will make it easier for you to work for me when we are reunited, I think. But I have gone on too long, and I have business to attend to. Yes, I am Tristan Cadence. I am your brother, and I am alive.
I took a breath. He always did have a flair for the dramatic. Unica. How long has it been since I've seen her?
I shook my head. 3 years at least. I'd seen her sister more recently, at least from a distance. I'd kept it that way. The alternative was uncomfortable. I lifted a pen and wrote a reply. Dear mysterious brother entity, I believe you might be who you claim to be. You'll excuse some continued skepticism until I see you in person. I paused, uncertain. What could I possibly say? The answer was obvious, but difficult. I missed you. I paused again, debating. But I am also deeply concerned. You have implied a connection with what Orden was planning. For fear that others can read these messages, I will not write any details here. If you are in fact working with the organization that was responsible for those things, I need to know why. And if you believe I will work for you or with you, I will need a firmer understanding of what I'm getting into. Do not take my help as a guarantee, my supposed brother. I miss Tristan Cadence, and I love him. I'll decide when I meet you if you qualify to call yourself by that name. Tell me how, where, and when I can find you. I was debating writing more when I heard a knock on my bedroom door. I swiftly tucked the book away under my bed.
Hey, Corin, it's me.
Marissa's voice. I opened the door and waved. Hey, Mara. It already time for training? Marissa shook her head.
No, it ain't that. I was hoping you'd be willing to help me with a little favor.
I raised an eyebrow. What sort of favor?
Need a bit of help with one of my exams. You got a few?
I nodded. Sure, but if it's studying, I'm not sure I'm going to be all that useful. Patrick is much better about history and artifacts and such, and Sarah is the expert on general magic. I was probably the best versed with the spires themselves, but I didn't think any of us had classes on those yet.
Not studying, I'm afraid. Need an extra set of hands for one of my finals. Two-person test, but I lost my partner.
I frowned at that.
Lost?
Kiri failed out. Someone figured her out, I guess.
Figured her out?
Guess she was a spider, and turned her in. She lost a whole bunch of points, so she got failed straight out.
I hadn't been paying much attention to spider division, but it sounded pretty brutal. I hadn't realized the spiders lost points if they got reported.
Yup, but they get extra points the longer they go without being found. Don't know the details. Teacher just told me a bit when he explained why my partner wasn't showing up.
I nodded at that. I'd missed my first chance to report spiders. It had apparently happened while I was out in the middle of nowhere with Karis after the incident with the spire. I'd have one more chance right before the end of the year, but I didn't have enough information to go on to report anyone yet. Right now, though, I had more pressing concerns.
Okay, what's this exam?
Don't know if I'll be able to help with it.
Oh, thank you, well. It's for monster hunting class.
I blinked. You have a monster hunting class? I hadn't even seen that on the list.
Yep, it's one of the ones the heavy combat students get.
I was immediately a little jealous. I didn't like actually killing things, but I assumed it would involve fighting illusory creatures, like in our fake spire tests. That was both fun and good practice. Still, it seemed weird that she'd pick me for a heavy combat exam. Wouldn't Patrick be a better match? He's got a combat attunement, and he tends to know a lot about monsters.
Yeah, but he's out doing something already. Been going out a lot lately.
I nodded. Maybe he's out with Derek. Derek seems to go out practically every night. Marissa chuckled.
Doubt that Derek wants Patrick with him while he's going to taverns looking for lady friends, Corin.
I blinked. Is that what Derek's doing? I just assumed he was training or something.
You're adorable sometimes, Cadence. Anyway, Tess?
I thought about her offer. I mean, it sounds fun, but don't you have any friends with combat attunements? She shook her head.
Most of them already have teams, and Sarah still ain't in fighting shape.
That last part was certainly true. Okay, sure. I'll help. What's this test involve? Mara grinned.
Oh, you're gonna love this.
I whistled in appreciation at the setup. We were north of the campus in an area set aside for large-scale training exercises. We were only a few miles from the school proper, but it looked like we were in the middle of the wilderness. Tall trees stretched out in three directions, and the area in front of us was a hillside with only a single obvious entrance. That entrance led into what appeared to be an abandoned mine. I could see a minecart just inside, filled with rubble, and a track that the cart must have sat on at some point. It was pitch black beyond that point, but Marissa held a lantern in her left hand, and I could see some unlit torches along the wall. Before we'd been sent here, we'd been given a few instructions by her teacher.
In this scenario, you're investigating an abandoned silver mine in the unclaimed lands. The miners unearthed an underground passage which led into a monster lair. One of the miners claimed they saw a glowing sword inside before they fled the area.
We supposed to clear out the monsters or get the sword? Marissa asked.
The sword is your primary objective, the teacher explained. Your secondary objective is to get out unharmed. Clearing the monsters out or otherwise securing the mine is a tertiary objective.
I nodded at that. Do we have any idea what types of monsters are in there?
None. The miners who survived saw only shadows.
With that little information, we didn't know exactly what to prepare for, so we'd have to think quickly once we found anything. After a few more minutes of preparation, the teacher had teleported us here to get started. Marissa led the way into the mine. I followed close behind. I wasn't allowed to use Selyse Leanne for this test, since I'd nearly killed myself in one of the tests with it. As such, I took a few minutes to repair my demigauntlet by attaching the metal portion to a newly purchased glove. Then, I slipped the scabbard containing my transference sword onto my belt. It was a little different from going into the spire, but I felt a familiar tension in my shoulders, and I planned to approach the scenario in a similar way. This should be good practice. I had to duck down to avoid hitting my head on the low ceiling, and the light from a single lantern was far from ideal. Still, we had an easy enough time making it down the first corridor. It was wide enough for us to walk two abreast, but I stayed behind Mara for the time being, planning to support her with ranged attacks when we inevitably ran into something we had to fight. Our first challenge, however, was a fork in the path. The path to our right led upward, and I could see some sort of light source in the distance. The left path led downward into deeper darkness. "Left or right?" I asked. Mara frowned, glancing from side to side.
"I'm not sure. I suppose if monsters are in the dark, it's the dark we should follow."
I nodded at her logic. "We'll probably want to explore both routes eventually, but we may as well start down there."
"Right then."
Marissa led the way, her lantern seeming woefully insufficient. As we descended further, I began to hear what sounded like running water, but I wasn't sure if it was my imagination. We continued until Mara raised a hand, gesturing for me to stop.
"Down here."
I paused, ducking and squinting. It took several moments before I could see what she was talking about. A hair-thin thread near ankle level. I blinked. "A tripwire?
Or something I like, eh? I see more of them up ahead, too. Gonna have to watch our toes."
I winced. My vision was far from great.
"All right, we'll take it slow."
Mara stepped over the glimmering strand first, and I cautiously followed. I could see more of them up ahead, just like she said, crisscrossing the hallway and intersecting with each other. I ducked under a patch of them, then the wires got thicker and thicker up ahead. That made them more obvious, but the passage was thinning, making it harder to avoid them. We reached an area where the path narrowed to single file and saw something thick and shiny on the ground ahead, surrounded in rubble. It was about as tall as the hallway, and about as wide, too. It was made of solid metal and covered in those tripwires. Mara knelt down as we reached it.
"It's a door, torn right off the hinges."
She glanced from side to side,
"and by the looks of it, it was attached to solid rock."
I blinked, examining the door with her. It was made out of metal and as thick as my arm. It looked like the type of thing I'd expect to see on a bank vault. I saw a few runes on the surface, too. They weren't charged, but they were similar to the ones I'd used on a shield sigil. They must have reinforced the already solid door with magic when it was still intact. It must have taken tremendous force to break it down. Or more likely just break the rock around it and knock it over, I realized.
"Guess we're up against something big, or at least strong. An Oni, maybe."
Marissa kept going, and I cautiously followed.
"Oni? Similar to an ogre, but a bit smarter. Generally scary-looking, often wields an iron club. I don't see an ogre being smart enough to lay wires like this, but an Oni might."
I glanced back at the door as we continued. There were an awful lot of strands in that particular area. They were extremely obvious, but there were so many of them that they were still difficult to avoid. Maybe they were just there to distract us from something else? It was certainly possible. We stepped and wove through a patch with a half dozen strands at different angles, then crawled on the floor to avoid a section that took up the whole top of the passageway. As we advanced, I realized a few important things. First, it was strange that the strands were glimmering like they were metallic. I wasn't an expert on tripwires, but that sounded like it was a bad idea in a place like this. The reflection on our light made them more obvious. Second was that they didn't seem to have any obvious anchor points in the floors or walls. No nails, no screws, nothing holding them in place. Third, they didn't seem to be attached to anything that would set off a trap or alarm. In fact, I didn't see any traps or alarms at all. The only thing the strands connected to was each other. It was that last bit that gave it away.
Mara? I don't think these are tripwires.
We could see the cavern opening up just ahead. Mara paused, turning her head toward me.
Oh?
I thought I heard the slightest hint of movement up ahead.
I think they're spider webs.
Spider? She glanced back toward the large room, then threw herself to the side, just in time to avoid a spray of green liquid coming from the center of the room. I stepped back, avoiding the resulting puddle. That was good, because it sizzled and burned the stone.
Acid?
That's not good. I heard a cackling coming from the room ahead of us,
but I couldn't see anything.
Metallic webs? Of course!
Marissa snapped her fingers.
It's a Joro... Spider Woman!
I had pretty much no idea what she was talking about. I'd already fought one giant spider, though, and I had no desire to fight more. Unfortunately, I could already see a handful of person-sized spiders descending from the roof of the cavern ahead. The webbing they were using wasn't the metallic kind. That must have been from the other creature Mara was describing. But I couldn't see that yet. Beyond the spiders, I could see a raised section of stone with a single glowing green crystal on it. "We fighting or leaving?" I asked.
"We're going in," she replied.
Then she rushed into the center of the room and punched a spider in the head.
"There."
I drew my sword and followed. Something snagged my leg only a moment later. I stumbled, but I'd been ready for this. I managed to keep my balance, sweeping my sword down and severing the web. I spun, following the webbing to its source, and I saw her. She was 6 feet tall, with black hair that reached all the way down to her feet. From the neck down, she was wrapped in that same metallic webbing that we'd seen on the walls, and she had a strand in her hand that I'd just severed.
"My, my, what a sharp sword you have there,"
the woman smiled at me. Meanwhile, Marissa grabbed another person-sized spider around the neck, lifted, and threw it over her shoulder. I heard a crack as it landed, then she kicked backward. It went limp. 3 more spiders descended around her as she moved toward the back of the chamber.
"Reshit! Don't talk to her, Cadence! She can compel men to do her bidding with her voice! Just stick her with something sharp!"
I looked back at the dark-haired woman. "Sorry, purely business. I'm sure you understand." I advanced, swinging my sword upward in an arc and sending a shockwave of force in her direction. She waved a hand and the webbing around her rippled, shifting into a shield of webbing, blocking the attack.
"Now that's a rude way to start a conversation. I really wish you'd stop."
I shook my head. "Nah." I took a few steps forward, barely avoiding another strand of webbing that was on the floor at ankle height. Her shield of webbing shifted into a long blade.
"So rude. You invade my lair, tear down my webs, fight my children."
"Cut you in half," I continued, taking a gamble and jumping forward. The room had a high ceiling, high enough, I guess, that I could use the ring of jumping safely. So I did. The sudden surge of transference mana sent me 15 feet in the air, and I flew over the spider woman with my sword raised to strike as soon as I landed. She spun, hurling a glob of webbing at me. I slashed that apart on instinct, and the force sent the halves apart, but some of it still brushed against me and stuck to my arms. Disgusting, but fortunately not enough to stop me. I landed and swung again, this time directly at the spider monster. She reshaped the webbing around her into a sword, blocking my own. The transference mana around my blade began to cut through her webbing, but slowly, and it had gotten stuck.
"You should really stop struggling. We could have such a good time together if you just listened to me."
"Shut it, spider hag!"
Marissa threw something, which I belatedly realized was the glowing green crystal I'd seen earlier, and it thumped into the spider woman's forehead. She recoiled at the impact and a trickle of blood dripped from where it had struck. She wasn't particularly resilient, at least.
"Ow!"
The woman rubbed her face.
"That really hurt!"
"No seducing, my friend!"
Mara absently punched another spider in the face, then sidestepped a jet of webbing that one of the others fired at her from its spinneret.
"I'm just trying to have a polite conversation."
The spider woman spat a glob of acid in Marissa's direction. Marissa dodged, but stepped into a glob of webbing on the floor nearby, getting her foot stuck. I jabbed my sword at the spider woman while she was distracted, but she managed to avoid the swing by stepping to the side.
"What sort of conversation?"
The spider woman shook her head.
"Well, for one thing, I was wondering if you'd be opposed to me eating you. I mean, it's really hard to get quality food down here, and people are just the best, don't you think?"
"Ew!"
Marissa started pulling at her stuck leg, then punched another spider that tried to bite her.
"We're not letting you eat us!"
The spider woman reeled back like she was about to spit again.
My sword was still stuck in her webbing, so I stepped in and punched her.
Ow! So rude!
She pulled back.